This is the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 320. Joining this evening is Mac.
Good evening, people.
And the dumbass himself.
Sometimes you feel like a podcast, sometimes you don't, but today I feel like a podcast.
Excellent.
Do you look like a podcast?
Let me check.
What would a podcast look like exactly?
I don't know. I was trying to find out a dumbass looks like one, and then we'll find out what dumbass looks like.
Is that a podcast thing?
We're getting ready for Thanksgiving around here. I guess you would have had yours last week, right?
Last month.
That's right. You guys are a month ahead of us.
That's right. Slowpokes.
What are you going to do?
Oh, yeah. Happy Turkey Day.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, we're going over to a friend's house. You know, we've done the last couple of years. So, you know, I got to make stuff. I made a couple loaves of bread today. She sent me a picture of her pool, and I sent her a picture of bread. I think she likes my bread better than her pool. The pool turned green
isn't
on her.
Isn't the third one of those movies coming out in a year or so?
Oh God,
Bread Pool.
You think you know they put it off because of the writer's strike and yeah. So I guess it's back in production. They put a whole bunch of stuff off. We'll see.
I guess it's supposed to be the only Marvel movie out next year.
Oh really? Okay.
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. I guess there's going to be some TV content, but it's supposed to be the only Marvel movie.
I've reached the point where I'm pretty much over Marvel.
Well, yeah, that's your prerogative. I'll resist the awesome weight of nerd rage and just keep watching the movies and enjoying them.
I mean, that's fine. I guess my point is that there's been so many of them that I feel like that's what the majority of what the studios are putting out. I feel like
listening to a lot of reviews about movies and stuff like over. And the thing that you notice when you look at people reviewing like more historical movies and stuff is that just everything is a bandwagon, right? Like something is successful and then like everything is that for the next like decade or two.
Right. When something new is an unknown factor, they have a specific name for an idea that hasn't been done before. It's an untested idea. If a movie fits a certain profile that's been tested, it's probably much more likely to get green. And I get that, right? And that's fine. And Deadpool, I will certainly go watch it. But I think that there are Marvel movies out at this point that I have just not bothered to go see.
Well, same. Part of it is that I don't have a lot of friends who watch Marvel movies to watch them with me, and it's always better watching them.
Yeah.
The thing is, part of it is just that there are so many of them.
Well, there are a lot. I think we might have watched some recently. I finally watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3. My kids wouldn't watch it because what's his name? Chris
Pratt.
Because Pratt, yeah, the church he belongs to is fairly anti-gay, and of course he denies it. I get it. I also get tired of intermingling people's personal politics with their art. And it's like, I can watch something like even Mel Gibson, maybe. That one's harder for me. But, you know, I shouldn't have to always think about what a jerk the guy is, because he may be a good actor and he puts on a good film, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that myself. I've kind of expressed this kind of sentiment before about other things. But, yeah, I mean, for me, like, I don't understand, like, getting, like, really emotionally invested in the, you know, private lives of celebrities and stuff. If they have, like, opinions on their own things and they're weird or whatever, whatever, I'm just interested in their movie.
I guess the other thing is that, you know, I work in a workplace with people who I vehemently disagree with about many, many things. But, number one, they're still good people, and I still have to work with them. If I refuse to work with everybody who was anti-gay and anti-trans, I might as well quit my job.
Well, you know, yeah, Brian, you got to remember there are good people on both sides.
Yeah, right.
You really can only take a hardline stance about stuff like that if you don't have to deal with people who disagree with you on a regular basis.
Right, exactly.
Because,
yeah.
You know, then you can really see, like, these people aren't evil and, like, just, like, constantly yelling at them isn't doing anything.
Most of the people I work with voted for Trump. I did not.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people who are not bad people voted for Trump.
Well, but that's the thing.
A lot of people who are not bad people don't realize that he is a bad person.
Well, you know.
And people with your and my mindset think that's insane. Why would you ever vote for somebody like that, even if you are conservative, but
it's a good question. They platformed him, and he was the one on the ticket. And if you're not going, I don't know. But here's the thing: we have different ideas about what America should look like, and I will fight for mine, and they should fight for theirs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the Republican Party, and we recognize the fact that the Republican Party is the kind of party that girls who didn't watch their drinks wake up to an unpleasant surprise in the morning.
Oh, God. Anyway, I bring up politics, right? Because that one's, you know, it's specifically, you know, the people that I spend most of my day with, you know, have different politics than I do. But we still have a job to do. Quite frankly, they know how to do their part of the job, and I know how to do my part of the job, and that's what makes it all work. And I can't let their politics get in the way of. Listen, these are my friends. they just have different politics, and we disagree. Yeah, it's fine. It's good.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's just like a lot of people view, like, anybody who, like, is of the other party as just, like, degenerates, you know? And you'll see, like, so much language, like, just the way they reference them, like, either, like, libtards or whatever.
Exactly,
it is,
yeah.
Throw into a comment section.
Sir. It's bad. And here's the things that I see. I hear that the right says the same things about the left that the left says about the right in a lot of ways. You know, and Lena Haba goes, you know, on, you know, talking about the left and how they just don't care about the law. No, the left vehemently cares about the law. Sometimes there's slightly different interpretations, right? But you know, they a lot of what's happening on Fox News isn't about the truth. It's about swaying the public opinion, right?
Right.
Trump is losing in the courts, but they keep going on, you know, on Fox and telling us that they're winning on the courts, right?
Yeah.
And they're not. They're losing.
Always remember though that when a narcissist tells you something or accuses you of something, they're accusing you of something that they've already done, and they don't want you to catch them at.
Right. But here's the thing: is that nothing is as black and white as these people try to make it. You know. In our daily lives, things are shades of.
I just think we'd all be a lot happier if Eileen Cannon would realize that she's not Trump's actually Trump's type.
Well, I do think that in trying to protect him, she screwed him. So I do appreciate that. I'm not above a little Schadenfreude when it comes to Trump. I'm sorry.
I'm not either.
I haven't even been. I haven't been paying attention to the news 2016, so I've gotten just vague. With that, he's like legal trouble.
Yeah, he is. And here's the thing is that I think that you're probably, it's probably healthier. Some of this very diverse, divisive politics and stuff like that, I get to the point where I was absorbing so much of it that I was like, okay, I'm done. Let me go watch reptile videos because I started to see just in myself just how bad it was for me. So I've stopped watching as much of that. I go catch a video here and there, and I try and, you know, I'd rather get my news from the AP than MSNBC, right? And Reuters is, you know, great, good sources. You know, I mean, it's choosing the right sources, too. I already don't get my news from Fox. It's, you know, it's Fox, not facts.
Now, you're talking about Fox Entertainment.
Exactly, right? Because we know that when they get sued for saying for that, we're just here, is it? We're just entertainers. God, you blur the lines, man. Well, at least the people who watch you think you're... But the courts are like, yeah, well, yeah, they say entertainment. We better move on. Let's get off this topic. We got plenty of other bad topics in the document there, and obviously we want to know whether you should nut up or not in November. So I guess, Mac, what time is it?
I won't do that.
You won't do that? Come on,
I won't
man.
Do that.
Fine, I'll take it on.
All right, go for
it's
it.
It's time for I, the dumbass. Bring you the dumbass's masturbation moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
Good job taking a D on that.
Oh, come on, like he wasn't expecting somebody to dump on him a little? And he might as well do it for, you know, if he can do it to himself, you can do it.
No, still can't.
Nut up in November.
Yeah, no nut November. Is it safe or healthy to give up masturbation for an entire month?
Well, part of this, I'm reading through this article. I think They're the doctor. Dr. Nina Malam talks about the dangers of not masturbating for an entire month, including something called scrotal pain following heightened sexual arousal that did not result in orgasm, which is known commonly as blue balls. It says, I thought blue balls was...
Blue balls isn't a thing. It's edging is what it's called. Listen, this is from the New York Post. This is from a total rag.
Okay. I was going to say about that I'm not sure that's exactly blue balls. I think blue balls is supposed to be like if you don't have sex that you just like it's uncomfortable. In general for a long time, like not just like right after.
I thought blue balls was a total myth.
I can see, you know, getting some sort of like arousal pain if like you edge like that, which that could be a thing. But that even if that's the case, that would be like a very temporary thing, right?
You got to think.
But it was described by the...
But I would describe this what she's talking of specifically. I would call that edging, right?
Basically
masturbating up until
thing.
Not and
edging.
You know, and the idea is that it's going to leave you with blue balls, and I think it's nonsense.
I honestly thought blue balls was something you put in the dryer to reduce static.
Ah, those are wool balls.
Okay.
whatever you think of it. Yeah, I do think that there is some element of like hyperinflating this just for the news article. I mean, like, you know, like you can like claim like some people like to fast, and like of course that's dangerous and can have health outcomes if you don't do it properly. So it same lines here that probably not really something you worry about. I mean, like, I don't think they're for most people avoiding men. But you know, like this, there can be some discomfort. That's true. And even if even under this definition of blue balls, that's just temporary discomfort anyway.
Yeah,
that's really not that concerned. But there is other. They said it's probably not a concern for most men, but for some men it might be the quality of.
Yeah, my vasectomy did that.
You have no need to worry about that whatsoever.
I don't think so. I think
there's actually a scientific reason why the quality of your sperm decreases if you don't masturbate for a length of time.
Sure.
I mean, essentially, if you don't let them out to play, then they go out on their own, and all you're left behind with is the lazy ones. They just go find a new host. That's science, man. That is science.
In the next article, we're going to be dealing with a lot of science on just that level. But
every sperm is sacred.
Oh boy!
If you don't use them, God will take them back. If you don't use them, God will take them back.
Every sperm is wanted in your neighborhood. Yes, I know.
Is that masturbating basically abortion? And that's like probably illegal down here in the States now. Menstruating is probably abortion too, right?
Even a bout of sexual intercourse that results in pregnancy, then technically it's still an abortion for millions of babies. Right?
Yeah.
Are you being uncomfortably reductive for the Republican?
Oh, boy. We better move on then.
Don't do that. Don't point out the
balls in the garden. There's also the claim that denying yourself orgasm increase your testosterone level. The study on that, but apparently it's just like it's a very temporary thing, not enough to like really do anything.
Yeah.
Your testosterone levels just go back to normal, like avoiding masturbation.
Unless that actually only has positive effects in these special cases of boxers who are coming up on a champion fight.
What's this? It says the urologist said that the research refutes the that the claim that came from a study of 10 men, which is that's not a study. That's a survey. And it uncovered that there was only a temporary boost in hormones. So are they saying that there's a boost in hormones? Oh, the second one, Malik claims that the absence from orgasm does not significantly boost testosterone levels over a substantial period. Okay. Okay.
But yeah, that's a lot of the claim. And, it goes briefly into this here, but yeah, the whole NoFap thing was started online.
Well, that's different. NoFap is kind of different from this. This is a fetish thing. This is more like like Locktober and or a chastity thing that you and your partner might be involved in, right? I'm going to say that whether this is appealing to a person is going to have a lot to do with maybe what them and their partner or what they're doing or what they're into, right? And I'm going to say, no, I haven't finished the article, but my guess is that 1 month is not really that substantial. And if you did do this for a month and you enjoyed it, right, when you go back to masturbating, that any negative effects that that might have happened for 1 month are probably pretty quickly, reversed. You know, it can't be that bad. We're only talking about a month here, right? We're talking about no nut November, not no FAP, right? Which is a different mindset.
Well, apparently, people go into this. There are no like strict rules about it, so people go into it with a variety of different approaches. Some of them like avoid it altogether. Others do a thing like edging. Now, the doctor here does say, like he says, pelvic floor muscles can carry a lot of stress, and if you're getting very stressed and trying to control your ejaculation over and over again, the muscles can get tense. So like this is be associated pain with ejaculation, testicular pain, and also pain. Defecation that can happen, but pelvic floor just caused by overuse. I think again, this would probably be a rare phenomenon to happen from that kind of thing. But if you're edging a lot, it's possibly a concern.
Maybe, but I mean, it's the same muscles that are used for orgasm, right? They're just being used slightly differently.
Well, I mean, Brian, you know about edging, right? You've got a lot. So, would you say you do it a lot, or just you know, the right amount?
Just the right amount, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't over-edge, if that's what you're implying. I'd be interested to read that the one, it seems like the only thing that they point to that's an actual study from the, that they link to. So this one's in PubMed, actually. But most of this, like, most every other thing in, well, there's a thing that points to YouTube, but a lot of them point back to but other articles on the New York Post, right? They don't cite a whole lot of sources, is what I'm getting at. Most of it points back to the Insider, New York Times, or New York Post. I mean, it's not,
you know, but being self-referential is in these days.
Well, that's true. But my point is that there's only like one thing that I think they point to that's even remotely credible. And of course, I didn't read this. But it's so this was Blue Balls, a sexual concern, a study. Oh, a survey study. First problem, right? Is this correlative or causational? Of genopelvic pain after sexual arousal without orgasm is implications for sexual advance. I don't know. I'd have to read this, but I was kind of wondering what their outcome was. Let's see. So the primary outcome of interest were the reports of the belief in blue balls / vulva, the frequency of pain characteristics of blue balls, and the incidence of being pressure of continuing sexual activity due to partner's fear of experiencing pain without orgasm. So I'm not sure that they found that blue balls are a thing, but culturally it sounds like we're afraid of it. I'd have to read this whole thing, but that's what it kind of seems like they might be going, that it's more of a psychological thing than a physical. And
there's a lot of fear-mongering in the article. There's fear-mongering about blue balls. There's fear-mongering about porn habit too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's. Yeah. I don't think there's any fear mongering in this stuff that's posted on PubMed, right? But
yeah,
being
they
a
did
survey
mention about pornography addiction, which a lot of people do believe is a real thing.
Yeah. Which of course we've talked about ad nauseum. But what I'll say is that the study they're pointing to is a survey of people, and there's no physical look at people to see if there's actually anything physically going on. So the best that they could probably do from this study, you know, is find out how people feel about balls and whether they think it's a real. But to prove it's a real thing, you know, that takes more than a survey study. Interesting. Well, let's move on. Can we move on to NoFap? You want to move on to that one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. No, let's not do it. It's NoFap.
Well, this is a long article.
It is.
Briefly go through some of the main points about NoFap. But the current NoFap online community was founded in 2011 by a man by the name of Alexander Rhodes. And he was inspired by a 2003 study that I believe mentioned, which claimed that men who did not masturbate for 7 days experienced a 145.7% spike in testosterone. And of course, the whole manly thing, testosterone levels, of course, are good for you. So, like, so many claims, and this happens in, like, every sort of pseudoscience, alternative medicine. This will boost your levels thing all over the place. This one is targeted towards men, and it's, you know, increase your testosterone levels and you'll be able to basically have superpowers. You'll have so much focus and energy and manly machismo, and, you know, like, get rid of all sorts of medical problems or whatever.
I mean, we've talked about the, you know, a lot of these you know, these products that are claiming to raise your testosterone. The Texex, or Texex, anyway, there's a product that we talked about. I mean, that kind of fear-mongering has been going on forever, telling you, you know, you have less testosterone than your father did, and, you know, people, you're becoming less manly, you know, and there's this certain group of people that appeals to. Not me, I don't have enough testosterone for it to appeal to me.
And, you know, like, and it gets pretty intense in some places, and, like, the entire NoFap community, like, isn't this intense, but, like, it gets pretty bad to, like, being peppered with calls to kill all pornographers.
Yeah, that's excessive.
Yeah.
So basically, these guys are just incels who can't get dates.
A lot of them kind of are.
Certainly, there's a portion of the incel population that does, you know, feed into this. I'm not sure if you know, it's probably not all just incels. There's some other, you know, I mean, Kellogg, I don't know if we would call him an incel or not, but certainly, you know, he promoted a lot of this bullshit.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, and you know, the thing about the science behind cornflakes is it didn't work. So
yeah, I mean, I masturbate while eating cornflakes all the time.
Yep. Do you masturbate with the cornflakes?
Into the cornflakes.
Into the cornflakes. Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, there's a whole lot of the article here which goes into the ancient idea of masturbation. Masturbation was often depicted as a positive thing in ancient times. An act of creation by ancient gods often happened through masturbation.
Now, that's interesting, because that's totally different than what we get from, you know, the Christian and the Muslims, you know, and the Jews, right? I mean, they've gone the opposite direction.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, the creation myth of the Judeo-Christian creation myth actually involves both incest and cloning. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's the interesting thing. It's like there were a bunch of different ideas about masturbation in the ancient world. Some of them a little more complex and not always entirely positive. They never really interpreted the sin of Onan as about masturbation, which on a casual reading, of course, it's not about masturbation. If Onan had impregnated the woman and then masturbated afterwards as well, God wouldn't have been mad. God got mad because he didn't impregnate the woman.
I thought that was Ezekiel. Is that Onan?
Yeah, it's Onan.
Okay.
Yeah, Ezekiel, well, I know he saw a spaceship, so.
But anyway, according to one historian here, historian of sexuality, Thomas Lecure, he claims that the idea of the modern notion of masturbating being so morally and spiritually and physically dangerous began in around 1712 with the publication, and the long title, this isn't all of it, but Onania, or the heinous sin of self-pollution and all its frightful consequences, both considered with spiritual and physical advice to those who have already injured themselves by this abominable practice.
So that's interesting. So they're saying that started actually in 1712.
This is when the link was made. This is when the theory was advanced that the sin of Onan was in fact that he masturbated.
Okay.
And that's a biblical under before. You should all the medical advice, how wrong it is, and what it leads. And we've already been a lot of that kind. Of course, we all know that it's supposed to cause you to grow hair on your palms.
Right. I have a slightly different interpretation of what happened here, is that somebody decided that this was the case, and then they looked the big book of multiple choice and found where they thought, you know, something in that book that would work for what they wanted to proselytize.
You know, the Onan story isn't really about masturbation at all.
Well, that's
it's about a pullout.
It's about a pullout, right? Exactly. Yeah. It's not masturbation at all. That's great. But that's the closest that he got, and he used it, right? And successfully, I would say.
So yeah, there were a lot of writers and philosophers, and it became just a thing to drag on masturbation from then, and that's what led to all the Victorian attitudes that we've been hampered with against sexuality and masturbation and all that kind of stuff. It didn't really start to change, I think. Well, the big thing when Freud came about, he didn't have a fully open view about masturbation, but he kind of viewed it as a stage that children must go through before they become, you know, sexually mature adults and, you know, get their pleasure from a woman or a man or whatever. And it just a thing to grow out of. And if you haven't grown out of it, maybe you need some attention to that. And that was his deal on that.
Isn't it also Freud who basically felt kind of similarly about clitoral orgasms, right? That you know, that you were supposed to, you know, that there was,
right.
I think he had a lot of hang-ups about that. How about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's true. Like there is a lot in Freud that's very sexually questionable. Of course, the practice up until this point, like when like medicine was becoming more and more sophisticated and everything, was to like do so many things that to discourage masturbation and stuff in children. Of course, like for girls, tying their hands to the bed to prevent them from self-stimulating. And there were also devices things that'll send an alarm if your child's penis gets erect in the middle of the night, or have like spikes that will impale the penis.
In which case, the alarm is loud screaming.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that we've created a lot of fetishes through this stuff.
And of course, there was also surgeries like clitoridectomy, yep, and other things. There was even a surgery for a period of time. Because the big idea was that when you masturbate, you're releasing this vital life energy out, and if you release it for no purpose, then you're just weakening yourself. And there was a surgery promoted to older men, a kind of a partial vasectomy to tie off part of that, and it was supposed to you keep in your juices, so you had more vital energy, and it would revitalize you.
I thought that if the woman said "bless you" after the man ejaculated, that wasn't a problem. I mean, is it different than sneezing? I mean, listen, it's the same kind of. I see a lot of similarities between the two.
Can you imagine just like Bukkake shot scene and the girl's like you?
It's so good.
And of course, there's John Harvey Kellogg, who he had for electric shocks, sewing the foreskin shut, or performing incision parts of on men and women without. So much more brutal than just advocating eating cornflakes.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's been a panic over masturbation in some form for the last few hundred years, basically, that has like differentiated it from the thoughts on it in the ancient world and kind of like solidified it.
It says here, this is about Kellogg, though invented for hospital patients, Kellogg's, is it euphemistic breakfast cereal, has often been linked to his militant anti-masturbation beliefs, since he regularly prescribed bland foods to curb sexual appetites. So it isn't just the cornflakes, it was bland foods in general, right?
Yeah, I mean, that that's basically what wholesome means. That's what
the
genesis of this word, because like spicy foods with a lot of flavor, those would stimulate not only food appetite, but also your other appetites. You want it to keep boring in order to control your urges, right?
I tell you what, though, if I'm eating spicy food and then I got to take my ass to the toilet, I'm spending a lot less time masturbating, right? Because instead I'm on the toilet because my ass is burning. So which is really better for stopping masturbation?
So, yeah, and that brings us all up to the no-fat movement of today, going off like those earlier studies. And you know how once they get their hands on a study that sets off some sort of alternative health movement or something, you know, no amount of evidence will bring that to a stop. So, this kind of thing is very resistant to any kind of evidence.
I mean, you can compare it as far as that's concerned to, you know, the whole GMO stuff, right? No GMOs. You know, you see that's an advertisement on boxes everywhere, like all GMOs are the same, and the gluten-free craze, right? Yeah. And once these things, if you can get one of these things to take on, you can ride that wave.
Basically, they don't have to have any science behind it whatsoever.
Nope, they don't. It doesn't have to be true.
Like you said, the study was like 10 people, and recently come on. A lot of questions, like not really telling them. But,
there's
no
statistical significance to and Wakefield, right? Remember what he did? You know, that was 13 kids, and what he did was so unethical that he lost his medical license, right? But still, to this day, there are groups that promote his research.
Yeah, although apparently some no-fappers call themselves fapsters.
Oh my God. That's good.
Which is one thing I learned in this article.
At least you learned something. Fastronauts.
Fapstronauts.
Fastronauts.
Fapstronauts. They're floating around in the online mano.
Oh God. So we're gonna add a little toxic masculinity to this.
Well, it's already been added.
That's fair.
It's been mixed in.
It's very well mixed in with all of this, and we're not painting with a broad brush here. Like a lot of them might be like, there is a lot of toxic masculinity.
Okay. So they're not necessarily introducing toxic masculinity with that, but they are definitely introducing the haunting sounds of Major Tom, at least into my head.
Major Tom to ground control.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, you know, if they're fantasies are not of pornography, perhaps they are of androgynous spacemen.
Yeah. Incels are really basically almost a cartoonish, you know, doubling down on the whole like manly man thing to like such a ridiculous extent, like the whole anti-woman thing.
There's an entitlement piece that I find extremely toxic to it as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, girls don't like me, so obviously there's something wrong with them.
Right. It's not something I'm doing.
And et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm interested in the, there's a white nationalist connection here, although it's a Swedish white supremacist though, but you know, they're talking about,
that Swedish chef, he's just so racist. You don't know the things that he's saying there. But when you actually analyze his text, he's just like all over about every he hates every race.
Yep.
He's just throwing out N bombs as he's making that food. It's horrible.
Basically, though, this I guess this is a Swedish white nationalist by the name of Marcus Follin talking about an ancient enemy of modern Europe. Using pornography as a tool of degeneracy, so you can't defend your white nation against migrant invaders.
There's a whole piece in here. I mean, what are they talking about? You know, when the LGBTQ community, it looks like OnlyFans and Tinder going on up here.
Yeah,
I mean, they must not like these kinds of.
And
there's a lot of hostility towards that kind of thing.
And through all this, they never mention the fact. The very, very real scientific fact that if you don't use your sperm, they go to somebody who's getting some. I have seen the lines of hitchhiking sperm.
Oh boy.
Heading for, you know, sunnier climes. They're very tiny. Also, they don't have thumbs they can stick up.
Are you sure you're not just noticing the floaties in your eye or something?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So I mean, this I mean, well, I guess we're almost done, right? I mean, there's a lot more in here, of course, than what you're covering. I mean, this is a long article and pretty dense.
Yeah, I've covered the basics of it and the most salient points.
Okay.
A lot going on, a lot in the ancient world, and a lot of stuff that Freud said and everything. But it just amounts to that modern day is we've got the incels and people who like just. There's a lot of like alternative health of testimonials about, oh, I stopped masturbating and, you know, the world opened up to me and things like that. But that's all it's really based on. There's no scientific evidence. But just that this has like a whole big history behind it of the complex ways we humans have related to our sexual urges and masturbation.
It's not new. It's just got a new name.
Right.
Yeah.
Abstract.
But yeah, this is kind of a doubling down on some of those societal attitudes we kind of thought we were getting rid of, I think.
Yeah.
And the those elements just especially with the internet, I think they just came together and we're tired of being pushed into a corner anymore. We're going to have our say.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. All right, I got a bunch of stuff in here, but Mac, do you want to talk about the cats? That's kind of an interesting article.
It is kind of interesting.
Let's do that.
And I'll be happy to talk about it. So the upshot here is that basically European wildcats and domesticated cats from the Near East have been exposed to each other for about the last 2,000 years. And it's only since about the 1960s that they've interbred.
So I guess where does the domestic cat lineage come from, Mac?
And which side finally got together and you know, decided to sex it up to the other?
Well, as far as the...
Has it got our domestic house cats suddenly got a lot sexier
no, in the 1960s? It's more that in the 1960s, the European wildcats were having more difficulty finding mating partners because of scarcity.
So they started mating with house cats.
They started mating with house cats because house cats were available.
Sure.
And you know, and
slutty house cats,
and bored.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about cats is that if they're not fixed, you know, they can while they're nursing, they can get pregnant again. We're dealing with it with an issue that we're dealing in with an issue of stray cats right now, and you know, there's the litter, the first litter, the second litter, and she's pregnant again. We've got to get her in. But they're certainly good at propagating. That the house cat is.
The math is frightening on that, yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it seems like the scarcer resources are, the more cats will try to propagate their seed. So
now that's interesting. Scarcer resources so that they try to propagate more.
What it seems to me, yeah.
So if you're saying that if they had plenty of resources around, that they might be pickier about mating?
They might not be trying to... They might not be trying to breed at such an alarming rate.
Okay.
I mean, they're essentially trying to... Breeding that fast is more of a survival attempt.
Sure, okay. Any cat live in the wild or in outdoors, less likely to survive than... Right? Even so, these strays, you know, are used to be house cats, right? But the mother is acting... I mean, that cat, I think, has probably been, you know, on... I don't know how it ended up. In just running around without a home, right? It's probably litter that got kicked out or something, right? Yeah, sure behavior. Moved. What's that?
Somebody probably moved.
Yeah, no, not her. I think that she might have been born to another stray cat. I suspect, okay. Right? Because her behavior is very different than her kittens, because we've been socializing the kittens, right? Basically, for the intent of catching them, right? So we've made sure, you know, so they get fed. And we interact with, and their behavior is very different from their especially towards us.
That's a really good question as to whether a first generation feral is more likely to be, because a lot of times a first generation feral just simply has no remaining trust for humans after it.
Right, and that's how the mother more so is. Of course, she's been getting fed so much that I mean, she's probably more tolerant than she was initially, right? Because they're extremely
But food does not necessarily mean love either.
I remember reading.
Oh, they don't love us.
At some point about some woman who was feeding a feral cat and and her kittens, and the kittens would purr around her, but the mother didn't know that purring would get attention and stuff, and would more often like yowl or whatever get attention, but then like one day just caught on and started purring.
And so certainly the mother does not purr at us, but all the kittens, and they meow when we come out with food. You should see them swirling around Nadia when she's carrying the food. The mother does not do that behavior, but all of the kittens. So it's something that they learn fairly quickly, and obviously it's got to be the mother doesn't do it, right? So it isn't a learned behavior from the mother. But they do know that you know they meow at us. You know, and cats don't meow to each other. They only meow at humans, is my understanding.
That's my understanding too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they mew and meow.
Yeah, it's also my understanding, though, too, that a domestic cat can never really successfully go feral. Not successfully, not to a point where they are healthy and well-fed and well-adjusted.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that Sylvester's problem?
Living in our neighborhood.
Is that why Sylvester is such a loser?
Very possible.
I think in my neighborhood, you know, I mean, feral cats down here are quite successful. And obviously there, you know, you go back, you know, through their lineage, there was a house pet at some point, right? They're not native. Endemic. They're evasive.
Well, I mean, the endemic cats we've got are primarily bobcats.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, like I say, house cats that end up as strays, you know, as feral cats. I think they're quite successful down here. I don't think that you see it as much in Colorado. It might be too cold for them to live through the winter. But down here, they can survive. There's probably feral cats up there, but not like down here. I think we have a much bigger problem with feral cats than Colorado could ever have.
Well, and those domestic cats have to have the will to be feral.
Yeah, I don't know. They've got a pretty strong drive to. So I don't know. It's interesting. We derailed your. Unfortunately, we've derailed. Let's get back to because there's some interesting.
You derailed my article and my Will Ferrell joke.
Yeah, exactly.
But so anyway, what they were able to do is they were able to actually track back the ancient genome of Scottish cats and find out that there was actually no intermixing of DNA material between the Scottish wildcats and the domestic cats that were imported until the 1960s.
So what wild cat do they have in that area in Scotland?
I don't know for certain.
Okay.
I do know that they've got a particular breed on the Isle of Man that has no tails. So
yeah, the Manx, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, my personal theory is that they started interbreeding during the 60s because, you know, free love, baby. But
right.
Yeah, their theory is that it was scarcity of partners among the wildcats that started leading them to interbreed with the, and you know, it may have been a scarcity of genetic material in addition to partners.
That's interesting. Yeah, if they were suffering that much, it could be. It's interesting. I hadn't considered, because a bobcat is probably not mating with your house cat, right? That seems highly unlikely.
They can. It usually produces a cat you don't want to come across.
Okay,
but they can do it,
and it's probably sterile if they do. I'm guessing that these native Scottish cats and the house cats, are they producing viable offspring, or are they producing offspring that's sterile?
Apparently they are, because if it was happening since the 1960s,
yeah.
they'd have to be continuing to breed. Thanks. They'd have to be having breeding offspring. I don't know about the bobcat. I know that ocelots can crossbreed with domestic cats, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm hearing bobcats can't.
Oh, bobcats can't. Okay.
But ocelots can.
Ocelots are smaller than bobcats, aren't they?
Yeah, they are smaller than bobcats, but they are a package of very, very small ferocity.
Yeah, to date, no bona fide crossbreed of a wild bobcat and a domestic cat has been. Nope. Yeah. So, but obviously, I mean,
Springer tried the genetic test, but he was always not the father.
Anything else in here?
Not really. Just it was talking about other domestic animals and the fact that I guess dogs have the same thing where they will not generally interbreed with wolves or coyotes, yeah, even though wild. They can.
Yeah, they're wild counterparts. Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know where that divide happens or why. I guess they don't know any. It's something they've observed, huh?
Well, it's also very possible that dogs are not interbreeding with wolves and coyotes because the wolves and the coyotes are clearly not good boys.
One of them's looking down at the other, huh? I don't know which it is.
Yeah.
All right. We're not going to talk about free will. We spent too much time on that. So I'm going to cover it.
Brian?
Yeah.
Cover free will if you want to.
Next week, we'll do a whole thing.
Not if you're destined to, though.
Yeah. So the FDA has finally outlawed a soda ingredient banned around the world. So I think, you know, this is an interesting point. So, like, we see California banning everything, right? And maybe early. I think they're right about some. I think they're too aggressive on others. But the FDA tends to be a little bit more methodical about it, I think. And so other places around the world have already banned this. And the ingredient that we're talking about is called BHA, which is bromated vegetable oil. And what they do with this is it's an emulsifier used in citrus sodas to get the citrus oils to suspend in the soda. And they've recently they've been doing studies about for a long time with this. And recently the FDA has decided that there's enough evidence to suggest that there could be some harm from this, that they are ready to outlaw it as well. I didn't look for sure, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if California is ahead of everybody, right? That they've already outlawed it. But I thought this was interesting. It goes through the timeline of it and takes a closer look. But I liked the conclusion of the article, where basically it says that, you know, this is just one of those things that the FDA is doing by watching they're watching for latest evidence on things to make a so how they're making a scientific conclusion based on something as opposed to jumping to that they're actually looking at recent science to decide whether or not these things are actually an issue or if you know it's just somebody saying it's so they're,
what are they actually replacing it with?
Well, that this article doesn't talk about a replacement.
Is it because it's just BVO under a different name, like the red dye?
You know, the red dye thing is coming back too. That because I think that didn't California just outlaw red dyes again?
They did.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, Pepsi has already gotten ahead of this.
Coke too.
So they've already been phasing it out. So they already saw the writing on the wall and have already been phasing it out. So they already saw this. They seem to have already seen. So yeah, but I was trying to look and see what it looks like. It was causing heart problems, heart and behavioral problems.
And it was causing a buildup in our fat cells of that compound.
Yeah, you know, I think that we see that a lot. I think that there's a question of whether or not that's always dangerous, right? I guess that, you know, you've got to take that chemical by chemical. Just because it's building up in the fats doesn't necessarily mean it's a problem, right? But if it's affecting your heart and behavior, those buildups probably make all those more the worse. I would have to. Anyway, this is good. This is what we want. We want them looking at, you know, because other places have banned this already. They obviously probably were correct. But, you know, they're looking at the latest trends and evidence, and they're taking action on them. This is what I want to see in the FDA, right? I want to see them making decisions that are reasonable and, you know, and have evidence behind them.
Yeah. Yeah. People are like always complaining, oh, they let poison in because of like the companies that are paying them off, the FDA's in like their pocket and everything, and it's just like, you know, they're criticized on both sides, whether they take too long on things or, you know, whether they put things through too quickly. I'm not saying that the FDA is beyond criticism, but it's just like, you know, a lot of like criticism is placed on them just for, you know, like, you know, they're trying to like regulate all this stuff, and we've got like all these products going out on the market making claims and stuff, and the FDA isn't even like able to get into like some of these natural health products, and unless like they're the thing made against it, they don't even have to prove they're safe, right?
Yeah, and that's a problem. I mean, so one of the things that this says here is the FDA. So the change comes. There's been questions of its possible toxicity, prompting the FDA to overturn the GRAS classification for BVO and temporarily limit its use to relevant small concentrations of no more than 15 parts per million, exclusively in citrus flavored beverages. So they're still not even being too overhanded. They're saying, okay, if you have to use it, you've got to limit it. Right? And toxicity is always about dose.
Of course it is. I mean, like, there are so many things, like, just out there in the environment. There's, like, cyanide out there in the environment.
Oh, yeah, everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the right dose, warfarin is a lifesaver. In the wrong dose, it's a rat poison.
Yep. Yeah.
But the push to get that removed, I'm assuming, was some sort of a GRAS roots movement.
What it said what GRAS stood for. Generally recognized as safe. There it is. So it had been generally recognized as safe, and they overturned that and limited its steam parts per. I think that's pretty reasonable, right? I mean, somebody did the equations to see what dosage they thought was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, I was impressed. This is like I say, what you want to see. You don't want somebody overreacting, you don't want somebody underreacting. You know, this seemed balanced. You want to do one story, dumbass, or wait till next week?
We can do my thing, or we can do one of yours. Doesn't really matter.
I always want to talk about scams.
I have this is something that has set off my my kind of skeptic alarm a little bit in my head. So I want to like go over it with you guys.
Okay.
This is about the same kind of thing. I've got two articles here. One is about an Indian woman who has fallen for these scams, but the current fervor over them is that these are supposedly AI voice scams, and it's basically an old scam. We've talked about it even before on this show, I think, where an older relative gets a call, supposedly from their grandson or granddaughter or whatever it may be. Sobbing, they're in danger, and they need you to send them money. And so, like, this has been going on for a long time. Although now, like, the allegation is that these are now coming through, like, with AI voices that sound exactly like the person that they're imitating, and all these accounts of people who like. They call up, and it was their voice that they had exactly their voice, what they would say, their cadence and everything, AI.
I do think that this is becoming more of an issue, but here's the thing, that they still have to have a reasonable source of it to build that to build that with. Like, they could scrape our podcast and perhaps do a reasonable version of it, right? Because there's a lot of content there. But is reasonable for my grandma, right?
Right. Exactly.
Are they going to have the same amount of material to do?
That's not really
reasonable, because your grandmother has never appeared on the podcast.
Well, she is dead, so makes it all the more tough.
That's what I was thinking too. I'm thinking this might be apocryphal about AI doing this, because there's so much talk in there, and like stuff going on in government talk about that. But it's like, is this a thing? Because in order to do that, you had to like get, like you said, a whole bunch of recordings of the person, and it took a bit of work to chop it up.
It's getting much easier.
I think it is getting easier, and like AI has some possibilities. I looked for any kind of AI tool that would be able to like mimic a voice on very little, like a short recording or whatever. I wasn't able to find anything about that.
Yeah.
But even if that were the case, it would have to be targeted specifically to a person that you'd know, their grandson or whatever.
Right. Yeah. It's much easier to do this in an email.
It's actually pretty well established, though, that all AI all AI voices are going to come out when they try to imitate a human. They're all going to come out sounding with a fairly thick German accent. So
here's the problem.
And they will be back.
The problem with blaming AI directly for this is that it doesn't require AI. We know that people have been scammed by just somebody calling up and claiming to be that relative.
You've talked about it before.
Yeah, I've talked about it before. So it doesn't require AI. It just requires a situation where you can manipulate a person, right?
But the benefit of blaming AI is that you don't have to admit that you were stupid enough to be scammed by somebody who sounds nothing like your
right.
grandson.
But usually, the better way to go is say, "Hey, listen, your grandson is in the hospital, and he needs a surgery, and they say that unless we can give him $1,000, they're not going to cover it. So, you know, we need you to Western Union us $1,000 so we can give it to the hospital, right?" That to me is still a better scam than trying to imitate somebody's, you know, imitate somebody and get them to send you money, right?
Yeah.
Because that sets up a couple of things. I mean, yes, you're being contacted by somebody you don't know, but they obviously know enough to know that you have a grandson, and maybe you don't. Maybe you're just, you know, we've seen people that are senile enough that they get scammed in this kind of stuff. You know, I mean. Older people get taken in by these scams much more often than, you know, I guess younger and older, right? But
yeah,
and I mean, like, if you're motivated, like if something's like invoking, if you're like especially like somebody you care about on the phone saying, Grandpa, I really need help, you know?
Right, exactly.
And
yeah,
you will, if, even if they sound like vaguely like your granddaughter, you'll be like, "Oh my God, what do you need? I'm there for you."
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it's the way that they're preying on these people that really creates the situation more than the AI's voice.
How different is this from the scam on Facebook where somebody approaches you as somebody who's in your friend list and wants to add you as a friend?
It's sure. Probably the same thing.
Yeah, it's very similar. And then start sending you messages to scam you, right?
Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm not sure that AI is actually doing this. I mean, as much as people are like raving, saying it sounded exactly like my loved one, I'm just thinking to myself, well, you know, it's a phone call, and a lot can go wrong with the audio thing of a phone call, and you can imagine a lot.
You can reduce the quality.
I'm not sure I believe that this is AI.
You can address the quality of the phone call to make it more difficult to understand the person, and so that you can manipulate it that way as well. Here's the thing: can AI do this? Potentially, right? Let's put a plausible
potentially,
on that,
yes,
right?
It's a plausible thing that you could get AI to imitate somebody's voice. I haven't found any AI apps that will like easily let you just like. Get like even a short audio clip and imitate a voice based on that. Maybe such a thing exists.
Yeah, I think it's going to be harder to find that. That's going to be more difficult.
Well,
but
no, that technology exists. I've seen it in use. Batman has it.
I guess my point is it doesn't matter. It's one more tool that scammers can use. Yes, but here's the problem. The tools that we are going to teach somebody to not get scammed will help to prevent against this as well, right? This is no reason to stop doing AI research or something stupid like that. I don't know if that's where they're going with this. That because AI is impersonating people, we have to ditch it, right? The fact of the matter is that it's not going anywhere, and this is plausible. And because it's plausible, we have to continue to teach people how to recognize scams in general. Right. And so that when they run into this kind of stuff, whether it be a new thing that somebody's doing, that they're going to stop and say, OK, is this real before they act? Right. I don't think it matters. I mean, whether it's possible or not is kind of irrelevant. The tools that we need to teach people haven't changed.
I guess the question I've got about the whole copying voices thing is, if somebody calls you and says, "Grandma, what is your brain going to do? It's going to assume that this is your grandchild."
That's probably
and
true.
So
yeah.
Whatever.
And most people's voices aren't really all that distinctive.
Correct. You know, even you, Brian, if somebody called you up and said they were your daughter, and they sounded enough like your daughter. Now, if somebody called you up and said they were your grandmother, then perhaps you'd be suspicious.
Right, exactly, yeah. I'm a lot more suspicious then, right? It's like, what, are you using a Ouija board? Come on. No, but my point is that I don't think it matters, right?
Yeah. We need to, in this age, we be a little proactive, and you ask a question. You ask a question that the other person wouldn't necessarily know the answer to.
If you
but
think
the scammer
yeah.
would not.
I mean, you can do things like if it's your daughter, particularly, and maybe they're traveling, and so you can have a code word, right, that they have to get, right? I mean, there are ways around this you can set up things.
That's not so good because the code word is always swordfish.
No, it's not. It's horse feathers. Shit. Great Marx Brothers movies, by the way. Well, you said swordfish. I said, horse feathers. Yeah. Doesn't matter. No, but I think we have to continue to teach people how to recognize scam and be aware that scammers are getting new tools. All I mean, that's the bottom line. They can tell us that these things are happening, and I believe and I'll take them on their word for it, right? Because we've seen if you want to create one of these voice profiles for Donald Trump, it's not going to be a problem. You want to create one for Biden, it's not going to be a problem, right? There's enough content out there you can create those models, and we've seen them, right? We've seen them in use.
And there's great content. There's the best content.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
everybody
I'm saying.
Says so.
Yeah, but scammers are always going to rely on the easiest thing, and like, it's kind of a hard thing to do. You'd have to like target people specifically and individually, and get some sort of recording of their voice in order for the AI to base its performance off of, at least.
I agree with that. It's going to have to be a higher profile target. They're not going to do this to me or you, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You're going to target somebody if you're doing this kind. If you're going to be doing this. But it's got to be a bigger term, right? The scammers from India are not using this technique. They're just going to call. You know, they're just going to call and say, "Hey, you know, your so and so is in the hospital, and needs money." They're just going to call up and say, "Hey, your social security number is leaked, and we're going to help you out, and you just got to give us all your money," right? They're going to continue to use the same scams that are working because they're still working, right?
Exactly.
This is one more tool if it's available to them, but they don't need it. They're
it's
already
not. It's not quality; it's quantity.
Exactly.
If it's working enough, if it's working enough times a day to make a profit, then it's working.
Right. If I send out, if I'm robocalling 100 people in a day, and I get two or three, you know, if I manage to scam even one of them, right, for a big enough amount, I'm golden. Right. Those other 99 don't matter. So, yeah. I mean, I'll take them at their word. For it that this is happening or that it could happen, I just think it's not necessary. I think it's too much work. I think if I'm going to scam somebody, this is not how I'm going to do it because I'm too lazy. Mm. And I'm still going to be able to scam them, I think, right? You're going to social engineer somebody into giving you money.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
but
like,
if you want to imitate Donald Trump, you don't go AI, you just hire Alec Baldwin.
Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like you. The big deal, they're talking about AI, though, it's like a whole new thing in this level of scam, but it's like, yeah, it just makes it more complicated.
It doesn't.
A scam that could be performed easier and better.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'll give you, I'm going to grant you that it's plausible, and my next question is, so what?
Right.
It's just one more tool that they have, and probably one that they're going to invoke very often, because this takes long-term planning to use this. None of these scammers are not looking at long-term planning, right? They're robocalling you, telling you that your social security number is leaked. They need you to rebuy your car warranty. They need to. I mean, there's so many scams out there right now that are so much easier than trying to come up with a targeted AI to scam one person. That'd be a pretty big haul. Because while I'm doing that, the weeks that it may take me to put that together to scam one person, I could have scammed 50 others with their social security number, right? Mm-hmm. It's all a matter of reward versus, you know, of the reward versus effort. This is too much effort. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
even targeting specific people, it's too much effort until they get an AI that can like do a decent imitation based on just a short audio clip. Otherwise, you're going to have to go through, find somebody who you've got an audio library of in order to get a good, you know, sequence.
This is too complicated. This is too much work for even ChatGPT. The ChatGPT right. scan utility is not going to take time to do this. They're just going to use a regular voice, and they're going to call and scam you with something else, right? getting a relative's voice and compiling this and getting the whole thing damn thing working, right? Too much. That's too much effort. Yeah, I'm going to call it plausible.
Yeah,
but
that was my thought exactly, and yeah, that's what. Glad you guys agree with me.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna have to do better than this. I just think that this is that there's nothing.
Well, you know, but when you have a shiny new toy like the word AI,
sure, yeah, and we see that a lot.
You
too,
want to
right?
use it for everything.
Yeah. AI should stick to masturbating. It's probably what
the
it's
thing
good
is
for.
Good at.
The thing is good at, right? Yeah. Well, on that disappointment, say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. That is another artificial intelligence in the can.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the amateur skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics Podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Cannell. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.